Welcome to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Here's your host, Laura Turner.
Hello and welcome to another special edition of Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funeral, celebrating lives. I'm Laura Turner. Well, last year, almost 1,200 Australian lives were saved through an organ transplant, all made possible due to the generosity of 421 deceased organ donors and their families, of course. And despite research showing 4 in 5 Australians publicly support organ and tissue donation, many more lives could be saved if more Aussies registered to be donors. And that's the focus of Donate Life Week this July. Tonight we have two guests who will share two different perspectives on the organ donation issue. Helen Opdam is the National Medical Director for the Organ and Tissue Authority, and David Riley is the recipient of a life-saving liver transplant in May last year. First of all, welcome to Great Australian Lives, Helen and David. It is a pleasure to have you with us.
Hey, Laura, and hi, David.
Hi, how's it going?
We're coming from all different places in our recording of the show this week. I need to disclose that Helen is in a hospital, so if we hear any dings and bells and interruptions, that's what's going on there. And David is remote from us too. So there's a few moving parts this week, but I'm so excited to have you and hear your stories because these are so important to Australian families, Australian people, the medical world in Australia. And David, we'll get into the story of your life-saving transplant in more depth in just a moment. But first, the important thing is how are you going now? How are you feeling right now?
Yeah, really well, thank you. Back to full strength. It's been a tough road to recovery and the rehab associated with the surgery. But yeah, I'm really happy to say that back to full strength and back to enjoying life and playing sport and being able to spend, you know, some quality time with the kids as well, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's for you really what it's all about, is that those loved ones around you, of course yourself and your well-being, but, you know, the threat of losing that, I can't imagine.
Yeah, it's almost sometimes a bit too difficult to comprehend, and I try not to think about it too much, and I just try to focus on the positives that have happened from it, and just to try to absolutely just live every day to the fullest.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Donate Life Week is a public awareness initiative that encourages Australians to register as organ and tissue donors. I am very proudly one of them, I'm glad to say. And I actually was reading through the notes last night and said to my partner, gee, I need to check. You're an organ donor, aren't you? And he said, yes, yes, I am. But I know that Donate Life Week is Sunday, 24th of July to the 31st of July this year. But I was saying that I am one because I know that there are people that aren't, and they might support it, but they haven't gotten around to signing up or whatever reason. Helen, can you tell me why? I mean, this is sort of a rhetorical question, but why it's so important to increase awareness of organ and tissue donation?
So, Laura, it's really vital. You made the point that the majority of Australians do support donation, but currently consent rates are a little under 60%. And what that means is that when someone has died in a hospital who can donate organs, and there's only about 1,200 people each year who die under those circumstances. It's a really sort of rare and special opportunity. That in those circumstances, consent for donation occurs in only 6 out of 10 people who could potentially donate. And so it's not consistent with what the level of community support is for donation. Mm. And there's a real disconnect between what people would expect about transplantation. I think people expect that if they needed a transplant, they'll have that chance for themselves and their family. And the big problem is that people either haven't thought about donation or they haven't taken that step to register and let their family know about donation. When someone has registered, 9 out of 10 families agree to donation, whereas if the family don't know what the person's wishes were, only 4 out of 10 families agree. So it's really vital. In fact, it's for our own self-interest, because we're each more likely to need a transplant in our lifetime because of sudden organ failure, much like David's experienced, than we are ever to die under those very specific circumstances where we could become a donor ourselves.
Helen, tell me, do you, if I was, you know, to very tragically die and hadn't signed up but had voiced my, you know, my want to be an organ donor with my family, could the process then go ahead if they say, well, she told me that she wanted to be one?
Yeah, absolutely. And what we always aspire to do, and a lot's improved in donation over the last decade or so, is to make sure that whenever someone does die under circumstances where they could donate organs or tissues to help others, that that opportunity is recognised and that we explore what that person's wishes were, either through the register, accessing the register initially, and then also sharing that information with the family. But if the person hasn't registered, sometimes the family know, and that's almost equally as good, but we find that registration just gives the family that extra assurance that they know what their loved one wanted. Now, families inevitably want to honour the wish of the person that they love. So the big problem is if it's never been spoken about and they don't know what their family member wanted. And then it's a really tough decision for them, often at a time where deaths occurred suddenly, unexpectedly. It's very emotional, so it makes it a lot easier for families at a difficult time if they've, you know, had that conversation with the person and if the person's registered their willingness to donate.
And I can well imagine these are decisions that would need to be, sadly, made quite quickly.
Well, relatively quickly. There's time. There's often, you know, hours. There may be a day or so. Sometimes there's very little time, and I think families can feel overwhelmed. And I think in those situations, particularly if they're uncertain what the right thing to do is for their relative, some families just find it too hard and say no. And that's a real loss, because I think, you know, each of us, God, if you could save a life, you would, wouldn't you?
Of course.
You would just, you know, see someone over there in trouble, someone's drowning, someone's in need, you're in a position to help them, you would do it. Now, there's a bit of a disconnect. We're going about it, our lives, we're, you know, got lots of different things happening. But really, if we just paid attention to this issue for a moment, it really only needs a moment to register and a brief conversation with the family. And someone, you know, you could save people's lives. It's an amazing thing to do. And I think, you know, David will share, and, you know, many people have stories of the difference it's made to them, their families, their community. It's an amazing, amazing medical treatment, transplantation.
I often think of it, Helen, and I can't wait to hear David's story, because it is those personal stories. And I often think about this in this way, that if you, the shoe was on the other foot and you had a child who was desperate for a transplant, or anyone, any loved one, and the thing that was, had their life on the line, was that we couldn't find one for them, and knowing that there is one out there, but that person just hadn't signed up, or, you know, whatever, to me is devastating and frustrating. And that's why I signed up, because I haven't really personally known anyone who's needed one, but I just, having children, think, my God, imagine being in that situation, you know. Here, have, you know, take it. Especially, I sort of think about it technically too. You know, if I'm dead, I'm dead. Take what you need, you know? Like, I know some people can't think of it that way, but to be able to save a life, you know, it just, you would have seen it from the other side of it, that that moment when people can do, are told you are, you're going to receive a transplant, the elation, just, you can't describe it.
Yeah, look, I think it's, you know, it is a really tricky thing. And, you know, I do see both sides. I work at a hospital where we perform transplants, and in intensive care, we sadly do care for a proportion of people who do die, who can't survive. And I care for families who are going through the worst possible time in their life. And I completely get that it's a big decision and it can be very hard, particularly if it's something they don't know anything about. And, you know, people have a range of concerns, and it's a sort of a death subject. So sometimes it's something people yes. haven't, you know, talked about ahead of time. But I'm with you. I just sort of think, well, I would want that opportunity for myself. I would want that opportunity for the people I love. So, I, you know, everyone may choose to be a donor for different reasons, but I sort of feel I've, for solidarity, for my sort of social responsibility, because I would want that for myself. I feel it, you know, an obligation to be willing to be a donor. And as an intensive care specialist, it's a sort of a tricky role, because my role is ultimately to care for patients, save their life if possible, and care for their families in a compassionate and supportive way. And ultimately, when it comes to them making a decision about donation, we're going to support them no matter what their decision. But what we want is that for it to be an informed decision, for people to really understand the difference donation can make. I think one of the big issues is people think, oh, someone else can do it. Not me at this time, not me when I'm going through this. But sadly, organ donation is only possible in the circumstance of a sort of a tragic, unexpected death. I wish there was another time that we could yeah. talk to yeah. families about it, but we can't. And it's a rare event. There's only, as I said, 1,200 people who die under those very specific circumstances where they could help others through organ donation. Basically, that means dying in hospital on a ventilator, because most people die and they're in a situation where their organs deteriorate quickly and they couldn't help someone through donation and transplantation. So each of those opportunities is precious, and I think we could help many more people in Australia receive that life-saving or life-enhancing transplant if more people knew about it and were willing to donate.
Now, speaking of which, the target for Donate Life Week is encouraging up to 100,000 more Australians to register. And if you're listening tonight, it only takes a minute to sign up on donatelife.gov.au or just three taps on your Medicare app. And we'll be back with more on Great Australian Lives in just a moment.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives. For Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives, I'm Laura Turner. Our guests tonight are David Riley and Helen Opdam, sharing two sides of the organ and tissue donation story as part of Donate Life Week for 2022. Now, we heard the sort of medical side of it in the first segment from Helen, but David is with us too, David Riley. Now, David, you were the recipient of a liver transplant. Tell us about your story. You're a Geelong boy in the beginning. Tell me you're a Cats supporter.
Absolutely, yep. Being a Cats supporter.
Oh, good boy.
Pretty much since I was born. So,
go ahead. Tell us about your story. How did you end up in the position that you found yourself in?
Sure. I guess we'll go back to the start. About 10 years ago, I wasn't feeling 100%. I had some really bad stomach cramps. It felt kind of like appendicitis, and I was waking up in Melbourne at the time. I went and saw a GP near my work. And then after the GP consultation, they did an ultrasound, thinking it was appendicitis, and they actually came up and scanned my liver. And the GP told me that I had indications of liver cirrhosis, which was quite shocking to hear. Only being 28, you know, to have that sort of diagnosis at such an early age was pretty daunting and scary. I guess the next 5 years were spent with local gastroenterologist through St John of God Hospital and the Geelong Hospital as well, trying to find out and define what the cause of the cirrhosis had been. So I went through countless blood tests, bone marrow biopsies, liver biopsies, x-rays, ultrasound, CT scans. I'm just trying to think of all the things I had to do. And really they got to the point where they couldn't define what the cause was, and my case was referred up to the liver clinic at the Austin Hospital under the leadership of Dr. Paul Gow. From there, again, the condition as well, it was pretty benign. I was able to live a relatively normal life. I had to undergo procedures for for varices in my esophagus, which required banding a couple of times. And then, yeah, at the Austin, I guess the diagnosis was what was called cryptogenic cirrhosis, which means they didn't really have a diagnosis. They didn't know what the cause was, and therefore they couldn't treat it. And I guess it was sort of just a guessing game. So I guess the advice was just, you know, long term, I'd probably need a transplant, but it wouldn't happen for about 15 or 20 years. I guess fast forward to 2020, went into lockdown, and that's when things really started to deteriorate from there. I guess over the course of a couple of years, I was hospitalised, I think, five or six times for various complications. I had sepsis. I collapsed at home in toxic shock with a bacterial blood infection that I spent 10 days in hospital with. Finally, to the point where the specialist team at the Austin basically said, you know, you need a transplant pretty quickly. Again, and that was a pretty daunting thing to hear. I guess the emotions that go through your head and the thoughts that you have are really, you know, difficult to describe and to comprehend.
How old were you then?
You know, given that was at 37, so yeah, a good 10 years later. Again, you know, from a day-to-day, I guess, you know, a life perspective, you know, things went downhill to the point where I couldn't get out of bed. I had to work from my laptop in bed. I couldn't take the kids to school. I'd try to go for walks or go to the beach. I'd walk 50 metres and then start throwing up. I'd have to go home.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just horrible to go through. You know, I was on a bunch of medication for diuretics. I had a lot of fluid. So at the end stage, I guess I was, you know, taking three or four diuretics in the morning. I'd wake up, I'd go to the bathroom probably 10 or 15 times a day to get excess fluid. I was on fluid intake restrictions, so I was thirsty all the time, but I couldn't drink too much water because of that fluid retention. The team had said that I needed to go on the transplant. So yeah, that was a good 10 years after the initial diagnosis.
And when they said to you, you know, you need one pretty urgently, obviously the wheels get in motion to get the logistical and medical side of that happening. But for you, you know, you'd been told that you might need one down the track, but all of a sudden it's happening. That must have been, can I say, terrifying? Or what was it?
Yeah, absolutely terrifying. To think that I've got two young kids, you know, at the time they were 7 and 4. To think that, you know, I might not be there to support them, you know, to see them grow up, to see them get married, to see them achieve, you know, everything that you dream that your kids would achieve. I mean, that's, you can't describe that emotion and how that feels to hear. But also, I never got down on myself, and I always kind of just kept pushing ahead and kept telling myself things would work out. And I just had an unshakable belief that things would work out for the best, because I had no other option but to think that. If I had gone down the path of, you know, despair and not believing that I would get better, then I'd be a wreck. I don't know how it would have gone through. So I just kept telling myself that things will get better. I will survive this. It'll happen. And I just kept telling myself that every day.
You were an urgent case, though, so urgent that you're only on the wait list for 30 hours. So did it get to a point where some, is it like the movies where they sort of run in the room and say, we've found someone? I mean, how, I have no idea. Tell me how that unfolded, that you, 1 minute you don't have someone and then very quickly and amazingly you do.
So, yeah, in the lead up to the transplant, you have to do a course of 3 days worth of testing to make sure that you're suitable. You need to go through a whole bunch of tests. And I went to the first day at the Austin. I drove myself up, probably stupidly. I probably should have stayed up there. So I went through the first day and then I came back home and then I didn't feel well, to the point where I started vomiting blood that evening. I was rushed to emergency in Geelong by ambulance at about 10 o'clock at night. And then I spent the next 10 days in hospital. So I got through that. That was a blood infection that had to be cleared from my body. And then I went to do the next 2 days in the workup as well. And then again, the same thing happened. I was hospitalized again. So even in the lead up to get on the list, I barely made it. Wow. I was hospitalized times in a month. So when I made it on the list, I guess the advice was that, usually these things take between 3 to 6 months, depending on your blood type. If you've got a rare blood type, they can take even longer. So I was pretty lucky to have that blood type, which was in the 3 to 6 month category. But the MELD score that I had, MELD score would indicate the chance of survival over a period of time. So my MELD score was 32. Which means that I had a 40% survival chance over the next month, which is incredible to think about. After being on the official transplant list, I was at home. I'd had dinner that night. I'll never forget it, and not that you ever would. And they said to look out for a number on your phone that you don't recognise, or it might come from a private number. And the work that I'm in, I'm in sales, so I always get phone calls late at night from random people, and sometimes I don't answer the phone out of hours, but I made sure that I did, and I received the call, and they basically said, we might have something for you, we've got a match, we'll call you back in 2 hours, but get prepared, pack a bag and get ready to come up. So
wow.
I said, okay, what do I need to do? They gave me the instructions and said, sit tight. So put the phone down and I told my wife, off we went.
What did you say?
I just said, they've got a match. We're good to go. Let's pack our bags and let's head up. And she couldn't believe it. We were jumping around the living room. My kids were here. My mother-in-law was here as well, thankfully, to look after them. It's like winning the lottery, really. And, not that I have won the lottery or anything like that.
Well, you have.
I can imagine that's what it's like, it's just indescribable, the feeling, to know that, the ordeal could be over. And again, I say it could be over because 1 in 3 transplants actually can't go ahead for whatever reason. They said as well, you could get the call up. But it may not go ahead. So there's that chance as well. So you've got that in the back of your mind as well, that you're getting worked up and, to go through that procedure. And even to the point where, you're getting wheeled into the operating room and there might be something at the last minute that's not right with the organ for transplant or something not right with yourself. So that's another factor as well.
Oh, just gives you chills just thinking about all those sliding doors moments that need to go your way. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. Our guests tonight are David Riley and Helen Opdam, both part of the Donate Life Week campaign. To register to be a donor, head to donatelife.gov.au. More with them in just a moment.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funeral Celebrating Lives. Last year, almost 1,200 Australian lives were saved through an organ transplant. So as Donate Life Week is marked once again, we're talking to two people working to spread the word about registering to be a donor. David Riley, the recipient of a life-saving liver transplant, and Helen Opdam, the medical director of the Organ and Tissue Authority. Now, Helen, we heard all about David's spine-tingling story in the last segment. We all think of heart, liver, kidney donations. They're the big sort of the big ones that we hear about. But tissue donation, especially, has had some great advances, hasn't it?
Yeah, look, that's right. And many more people are in a position to help others through donating tissue. And when we talk about tissue, we're talking about eye tissue, we're talking about musculoskeletal tissues, that includes bones and ligaments and tendons. We're talking about skin, which is just a shaving of skin that can help burns victims. Cardiovascular tissue, it can be heart valves that can help, people, sometimes children who need heart operations, who have complex heart problems. Musculoskeletal tissue that can be used for people who have major problems with joints and bone, so it can restore function and mobility. And, of course, eye tissue restores sight. So, you know, it's often a little the tissue people say, it's always talking about organs, you're always talking about organs. Well, tissues are very important as well, often life-restoring rather than life-saving, but can be life-saving as well.
Yeah, and to some people, just vital, I'm sure of that. Now, the great registration race for July, I know that you're going to tell me it's easy to register because it'd want to be, wouldn't it?
It is easy to register. It only takes a minute. You can go to the donatelife.gov.au website or go through your MyGov account and through the Medicare app, and it's only three taps to register. In fact, we had a boost in registrations last year when people were accessing their vaccination certificates through the MyGov website, and I think people just took that opportunity because they saw the portal to register. It's really easy to do and, you know, only takes a minute.
Yeah. We talked before about how, there's a great statistic, of Australians who support it, but, you know, they haven't just gone that extra mile to sign up. Do we know where that loss in communication or motivation is happening or why?
So I think we all live busy lives, you know, and there's so many things to do. And I think some people are willing to donate. They've thought about it, but they just haven't done it. They haven't realised the importance of doing it. Sometimes people think, oh, my family know or they can decide. Well, don't leave it to chance. Make it clear. Make it clear by registering. And it doesn't have to be a long conversation with your family. Sometimes when I'm speaking with families and we're talking about whether donation's going to be the right decision for their loved one and for them, they can just recall a brief conversation, and it really just makes that decision so much easier for them. But one of the other big problems we have, I think, people who are uncertain about donation, and sometimes that can be because of incorrect beliefs, because of myths. And one of the common ones is people rule themselves out. They think, I'm too old, or I'm not healthy enough, or my lifestyle choices mean I can't donate. And that's a big mistake. Please don't exclude yourself. Count yourself in, register, let your family know, leave it to the medical experts if it comes to the point where you can donate. We've had people in their 80s donate, in fact, a liver that can be life-saving for someone. Wow. We've had people who are smokers, drinkers, same-sex relationships, who use drugs. None of these things are exclusions. If you've lived in the UK, you can donate organs to help others. So don't exclude yourself. And some people think because of their religion, maybe it's not compatible with donation. But in fact, all the major religions support donation as a generous gift, you know, and they they really do support it as a thing that people should do. And the third thing some people worry about, and this one always perturbs me, they think maybe the doctors won't try as hard to save my life if I'm registered. And I know as an intensive care specialist, oh my goodness, please don't believe that, because healthcare staff foremost always try to save someone's life. And it's only when someone's died or it's quite clear that death's inevitable that people start to consider donation. So please don't exclude yourself for odd reasons. We've got an excellent system in Australia. You can trust that everyone will do the very best things. And donors are treated with such dignity and respect and honour. Families are cared for. Everything's done so well.
Can I ask, and I don't know if you know the answer to this, but is there a specific organ or type of tissue that is the most in need?
Well, the most common organ transplant is kidneys. And
we've got
a lot of people with end-stage kidney or end-stage renal failure on dialysis. In fact, there's 13,000 people at the moment on dialysis, many of whom could benefit from a kidney transplant. And there's currently waiting for, actively waiting on a range of different wait lists. About 1,700 people in need of an organ transplant. But kidney transplant's the most common, I think, just because of the amount of kidney failure we've got in our community. It's life-saving, because if you receive a transplant, your life expectancy improves if you've got kidney failure, and your quality of life is so much better. I don't have kidney failure, but I know patients who have and who have then received a transplant, and not having to have that dialysis treatment three times a week and not having the lethargy, the tiredness, the foggy brain, the lack of energy, all of the things that go with kidney failure and dialysis treatment, all of that goes with a kidney transplant. Kidney transplantation. And then with tissues, eye tissue. So last year in Australia, there were a little over 2,400 people who benefited from corneal transplants, which is just the clear part of the eye at the front. So that was sight restoring. And in fact, tissue donors overall, there were more than 9,000 Australians who benefited from tissue transplants. So that could be use of bone, other tissues, skin. And some of those donors are not all people who have donated after death. We also have living donors, and the most common living donor are people who have a hip replacement. And when they take out the old hip that was worn out, that bone can be donated. It goes through a production process and it can be made into bone products that can be used for dental procedures and other orthopedic procedures. So, yeah.
That's a beautiful process, I'm sure, and very worthy recipients on the other end. Now, Helen, there's many hats that you wear. I know that you work in ICU as well as with the Organ and Tissue Authority. Is it the most rewarding part of your work to see a transplant succeed?
Oh, look, transplantation's a miraculous treatment. I mean, there's many health conditions that we have that there are some effective treatments for, but really often there's few cures. Sadly, there's many conditions that that can't be really helped a lot. But to take a condition like David was describing, where you're really facing death, and then to have a treatment that is so life restoring, is really one of the miracles of modern medicine. So yeah, it's incredibly rewarding seeing that, particularly when you get to see someone like, David sometime after the procedure, who, is really living a normal life. And I think it's that sort of experience that inspires healthcare workers like myself to just be committed to doing all we can you know, with our various hats, always, you know, in ICU caring for all the patients and their families who unfortunately are facing life-threatening illness, but also, you know, through donation and transplantation and doing our very most utmost to help as many people as we can.
Just incredible work that you do. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funeral, celebrating lives and more in just a moment.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Our guests tonight are David Riley and Helen Opdam, sharing two sides of the organ and tissue donation story as part of Donate Life Week 2022. If you're not an organ or tissue donor, please sign up now. They need your help. Now, David Riley, we heard your story earlier on in the program about receiving a life-saving liver transplant. Here's your pitch to those listening. What do you say to get people to sign up, to help people like you?
First of all, I think you should have a conversation with your family or your loved ones, or even with yourself, to think if you're in a situation where you could save someone's life. As Helen mentioned before, if someone was drowning, if someone was about to get hit by a car, of course, the first instinct you would have would be to try to help that person. So have a conversation with your family, have a conversation with yourself, have a conversation with your loved ones, and talk about how potentially that could affect you if you're in the same position that I was in. I've got young kids, and to think that without the generosity of my donor family and the conversation, the decision that they made, to become organ donors, that I wouldn't be here today. And that's the stark reality of it. I wouldn't be here to take my kids to school, to, you know, watch them grow up, to coach their basketball games, you know, and to be around for them as a father. I guess that's my plea to anyone listening here, is to have that thought first. And then the process is as easy as double tapping on an Instagram post or liking something on Facebook. It takes 1 minute to sign up, either through the donatelife.gov.au website, or you can do it through your Medicare app through the MyGov website. It takes 1 minute, and that 1 minute could change the life of someone down the track absolutely significantly, as it has for myself.
And Helen, what would you say to those from a medical point of view? There must be devastating, you know, scenes for medical professionals like yourself when this doesn't happen. What would you say to those who can help it happen?
Look, I think one of the big worries, look, there's been a bit of research into this, is that people maybe have had to make a decision under pressure, because as we've talked about, there's, you know, there is a time pressure at the point when someone's dying or died and a decision needs to be made. And sometimes that decision can sort of be a reactive, I don't want to think about it, no. And perhaps down the track, people might regret that. And I think it's really important that people take the time, if they can now, to find out information about donation and transplantation and let their family know, so that a decision will be made that's going to sit well for that person and with their family with the passage of time. Really important to do it ahead of time, because it's really difficult for families if they don't know it at that difficult moment.
And how do you do it? If you're listening right now, let's hear it again. How do you do it?
Go to the donatelife.gov.au website. Only takes a minute, or through the MyGov website, the Medicare portal. Again, a few taps and you can be registered to be an organ and tissue donor. And please let those closest to you know your decision to donate.
Thank you, David Riley and Helen Opdam. Thank you so much for being with us on what is a really important week for Australia, and that, of course, is the great donation race, the great race to get as many donors as possible signed up. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much, Laura. Thanks, David.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And of course, if you've enjoyed my chat with David Riley and Helen Opdam tonight, you can sign up to the Great Australian Lives podcast. And don't forget to join me the same time next week when we celebrate another Great Australian Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.